Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right. Hello, boys and girls, and welcome to another episode of the Chase Thomas podcast, the full ride edition of the Chase Thomas podcast. My name is Chase Thomas, and I am joined, as I am twice a week during the college football season, Matt Green, down there in Tequila, Georgia. Matt, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good afternoon, sir. I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Busy as always. I spent a lot of time reading and watching a lot of pro wrestling and watching Boy Meets World and doing my Boy Meets World writing. And yeah, staying busy as I usually am. What about you? What was your morning like, Matt?
Boy Meets World, really taking me down memory lane there. The old Disney Channel days. But today I've just had a standard work week, you know, just started working at 9 and here we are.
All right. And then you were going at Pat 40 on Twitter. I thought about texting you about this.
Oh, actually I did. Yeah. I did comment on that. Did it start scrolling another conversation? I don't think I've been on Twitter since then.
I don't know, but not a fan, because my friend of the pod, Dan Wolkin, gets a lot of crap from a lot of people, and I don't know. Yes. People just get really angsty. There's like a certain subset. It's like the Outkick the Coverage fan base that always goes at Pat and Dan, and I don't know. I don't like it. Don't join in, Matt. I meant to text you about that. I didn't like it. Leave Pat alone.
I don't understand. I'm not as radical as maybe the whole Outkick following, but I don't understand. I feel like it's your job. You're getting paid on college football, right? If there's no college football, then no one's around to, no one's reading Pat 40's columns. You know what I mean? So I guess I don't understand the people who seem to be rooting against college football. You know what I mean?
No, they're not rooting against college football. No one is rooting against college football. No one's rooting against sports being around. We know that means more layoffs. We know that means just harder times for everybody. It's just doing it safely. Like, it's just everyone's nervous. And Dan and Pat and other sports writers and myself included are just nervous that one of these kids... We understand that, like, the comments always are like, what's the death rate for athletes who are in this kind of tip-top shape at this age group and blah, blah, blah. It's going to take one for them to get put on a ventilator, get in bad shape, and then we have to recalibrate everything. And it's just, I don't know. It's a complicated thing, and it's okay to be worried. Does it mean that we want sports to not be around? No, but like Saban, it's going to be in our notes. Saban has it. Saban's older. Saban could die from it. He could absolutely die from it. And I don't know. I just think we like to block it out. And like the there's a difference between doom and gloom and rooting for failure and also just being like, hey, we're treading on waters we've never treaded on before. And it seems like certain schools are less certain about how to do this than others. Like it seems like there isn't really a great plan, and that I don't know. I think people are just nervous. I think that's the biggest thing. They're nervous.
That's fair. And if I'm being honest, I didn't read the column by Pat Forty.
Classic Outkick the Coverage reader.
I'll be honest. I didn't read the whole column, but it's like his tweet is America wanted football in a pandemic. Here it is. Nick Saban in isolation, the Patriots postponed, and more problems on the way. It's like that just gave such a smug vibe to me, if I'm being honest. Like it really does. Like, you know, we're not gonna spend the whole show talking about Pat Forty and, you know, people claiming that some people are against college football and all that. But it did seem like there was some journalists out there that like got some satisfaction out of football being canceled. It really did seem like that during this whole COVID period. But we won't get too big into that.
No, because I might just hang up on you. Well, anyway, thank you folks for listening to today's episode of the Full Ride on the Chase Thomas Podcast. Don't forget, you can get involved with the show by following us both on Twitter at @Chase_Thomas and Matt at @Matt_W_Green. Go check out ChaseThomasPodcast.com. Listen on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We are there. Matt, what are your weekend watching plans? I will be at the Tennessee-Kentucky game on Saturday. What are your plans?
Oh, you're going to be there. Nice. Mm.
I want to see some no offense. I'm excited to see Kentucky attempt to score an offensive point this week.
Hey, I mean, that Kentucky defense looked pretty good last week. So, I don't know. We'll see. You should be in for a good one. But me on this Saturday, I feel like I got a pretty wide open slate, you know? So we'll have to see what the plans are. I obviously know where I'm going to be at 8:00. That's the big one this week, but yeah, I'll just be assuming we still have games this weekend. It seems like every day we get more and more games postponed. But assuming Georgia Alabama happens, you know, then I'm gonna lose my mind if Georgia Alabama doesn't happen. Like I can deal with the other games being postponed, but this one, we've had this one circled for so long.
Well, we're gonna get into an element of Alabama Georgia that I'm already fuming internally about. Like I'm already losing my mind thinking about the conversations I'm going to have with friends of mine regarding Georgia Alabama, you included. But we'll get there.
Oh, fun.
Before we get into our news this week, because we have a little bit of news that I want to touch on, but where are we at picks wise to remind the listeners as we go into a pivotal bounce back week for me, just a brutal week for me last week. And I have to step up big. I know that, but where are we at?
Well, full disclosure for our listeners out there, somehow I have miscounted our records. So I was looking at the overall before the show started
for early November.
And our overall record is one game less than the against the spread record. So I'm going to have to go back and see like where I missed a game. But so last night, actually, I don't know if you caught any of that Coastal Carolina.
I watched it this morning, yes.
Yeah, it was a great game. So you actually, your bad week overall did not get any better because you had University of Louisiana winning the game. So you went 1-10 on the week, but you did have Coastal Carolina covering the spread. So you did go 4-7. You got one last win in there. I went 6-5 against the spread and 6-5 overall. So I wanted to preface the records by saying that I have messed up here, so we're one game off on the overall record. But right now, against the spread, we are both tied, 27-24, both of us, and you are 26-26 overall, and I'm 33-19 overall. But obviously, like I said, one more game, we'll have to figure out the math on that one.
Okay. Well,
I'm letting you down, sir. I'm sorry. I hope I don't lose my job.
Just be better on Sunday than you were today is all I ask, man. All you can really ask for a person is to be better tomorrow than they were today. If you're improving as a person and improving as a stat keeper, then I'm happy. Am I disappointed today? Yeah. Am I mad? No. I'm just a disappointed dad today. There's a piece on The Athletic. It's a snippet of Ed Orgeron's new book. Coming out about his time at LSU to this point. And I think it's called Flip the Script. And Bruce Feldman is a part of this piece. But anyway, there's two athletic pieces we're going to touch on in the news. And I don't know if you had a chance to read it. It's in our show notes. But I came across, like, he's very open about how much he didn't like Matt Canada. And that is always something that I thought was very odd, that one-year split where they, like, Matt Canada's just had a good offense everywhere he's gone, and I'm a Matt Canada guy, and I don't really understand why he's bounced around as much as he has, and like why that LSU partnership did not work. But them just being like, yeah, Ed, you're losing control, and him and Matt Canada, he talks about in this piece that they never talked that season. They didn't speak. Like he and the offense were not talking, and it's crazy to think that there are Power Five jobs in positions like that where coaching staffs where the coordinators don't even talk and just let them do their thing and then we'll move on. I just couldn't believe that he admitted that they just didn't speak.
Yeah, that's very strange. Can we bring it back though? Like, why is Ed Orgeron have a book coming out? Like he's basically been a mediocre to terrible coach ever until he got to LSU, and he's been at LSU, what is this, his fifth year?
Yeah,
fourth full season at LSU. Like, we'll see if he makes it a full season how this season started.
No, he just won a national title. He's safe for a long time.
Hey, Gene Chizik didn't last very long after that national title.
That is true. Honestly, but, you're not wrong. That is true, and Gene Chizik losing Gus Malzahn and replacing him with Scott Loeffler. And guess what? Ed Orgeron lost Joe Brady and replaced him with Scott Linehan. I mean, and lost Dave Aranda, replaced him with Bo Pelini.
Yeah, I mean, having missteps. A generational quarterback like Cam Newton and Joe Burrow, there's a lot of similarities there. I will say...
I like this. This is spicy.
I will say LSU... The non-championship years for Ed Orgeron are significantly better than the non-championship years were for Gene Chizik. Like, I think he may have been below 500 on the years where he didn't have Cam Newton as his starting quarterback. So he didn't last long there. I'll give Ed Orgeron a little bit more credit because, I mean, he built an entire roster, built the coaching staff. Like, while I think he kind of got lucky, kind of caught lightning in a bottle, he does deserve credit for getting everyone and building that team the way he did. It's like Auburn was like a mediocre team that you just added Cam Newton to. Like, obviously they had Nick Fairley too, but it was essentially like a mediocre team. They were like 50th in the country in scoring defense or something. They were just mediocre across the board, but Cam Newton's like the greatest player ever, and he took them all the way to the national championship. So there's some similarities there. I'm not ready to call Ed Orgeron Gene Chizik yet, but it just seems so premature. Like, You gotta write a book when your legacy's over. Like, that's, I don't know. That's interesting to me. But yeah, I think the Matt Canada thing, I think, was part of why like a lot of us were skeptical of the Joe Brady thing going into 2019, because you're like, okay, I've heard this before. LSU's gonna open up the offense. Yeah. Well, I'll believe it when I see it. And 2019, we definitely saw it. So I'm curious to why the Matt Canada thing never worked out in LSU. And like you said, if Ed Orgeron is saying that they never talked, like, well, that's probably a pretty good indication of why it didn't work out at all there.
I just don't think he's going to be honest about like why they just like why he was not comfortable with this scheme and everything else. Like, I want the Matt Canada retaliation book. whoever you got to do, Triumph Books, like, it's time to get in there. I want Matt Canada's side of the story. This is juicy. I want to know what happened here. This is fascinating to me. This is
like a rap battle. He's got to yeah. clap back with his diss track.
I think so.
I'd be interested to see Matt Canada's, interested to hear Matt Canada's side.
Yeah. Nick Saban tested positive for COVID-19, as we talked at the top of the show. There's still miscommunication right now as to how much he's going to be able to communicate with the Crimson Tide on Saturday. They play at 3:30 in the prime CBS spot against the
Bulldogs. Oh, no, this is 8 o'clock CBS.
Is it 8? I thought it was 3:30. Yeah. Okay, it is 8. Okay. I guess this game's going to happen, but something that I immediately thought of is, do you know what Butch Jones' current title with the Alabama Crimson Tide is?
Yeah. What's that?
I'm going to pull it up for you. He got a promotion back when Mike Locksley left for Maryland. People forget this little nugget. He was set to become the associate head coach at Maryland with Locksley. When he first got there as the assistant after that 1 year of his offensive analyst role at Alabama. Well, he is currently the special assistant to the head coach. Now, analysts are not like official coaches and things like that. He's an official coach now. He should have to coach this game, right? This should be Butch Jones.
Why would he trump any sort of position?
Because
coach
he's literally the assistant. It's like when Dabo was the assistant under, who did he replace? I'm already forgetting. Who was Dabo replacing?
Terry Bowden.
Yeah. So he was the assistant coach. He was the AHC. That's basically what Butch Jones's title is at Bama, and they paid him a lot of money to keep him from going to Maryland with Locksley. You're not going to promote Starkeesian for this. You're not going to promote their D coordinator for this. Like, he's super young. There's no one else.
Golding.
Yeah, it's time. Butch Jones, back in the SEC. If I do not see Butch Jones losing his mind on the sidelines in a Georgia-Alabama game on Saturday, leading the Crimson Tide out of the tunnel, I'm going to be upset. That is what I want. It's time. Butch Jones, let's go.
I think you're going to be disappointed, sir. I think he's got, as terms of head coaching experience on that Alabama roster, I guess he's got the most years. I don't know. Sarkisian's probably right there, but obviously the most years coached in the SEC. But Sarkisian has been the head coach at a major college football program. I mean, at two major college football programs. So, and he's the current OC. I think if anyone is the head coach on Saturday, he seems like the likely choice, in my opinion. He's already calling the plays. I feel like it seems like an easy transition.
Well, they also have Charlie Strong and Mike Stoops as options, it seems like.
Well, yeah, I mean, Alabama is just like the coach rehab at this point. Just go to Alabama and then you're bound to get a coordinator.
They're on the
job,
payroll. Stoops, Strong, and Jones are all on the payroll. It seems like Sarkisian's gonna lead them. I mean, Sarkisian, I think, was actually, now at this point, people are underrating how good of a college head coach he was. He really turned that Washington program around, and he was good at USC before everything fell apart. I don't know. I want Butch Jones. That is what I want.
I think that's some of your orange and white checkerboard glasses I'll see in this one.
Then what's the point? What is this title? This is what he was built for this title. Assistant to the head coach is literally built for this one job. If Saban gets sick or can't coach, he steps up and takes over. I don't understand the point.
I feel like there's all those titles. You know, he's essentially assistant to the regional manager over here. You know what I mean? Like, no one's calling on Butch Jones to make any big time decisions.
I guess that's probably true. Zach Wilson, there's a really great
good
piece.
Title to make him feel good.
Yeah. But they paid to keep him from going to Maryland. What's the point of paying to keep him from going to Maryland? Whatever. Zach Wilson, my favorite college quarterback this season at BYU. There's a great profile on him in The Athletic this week by a friend of the pod, Chris Vanini. It's fascinating because he is obviously from Utah and was committed to Boise State. and then elected not to go to Boise State, decommitted, and then almost right away committed to BYU when they fired Ty Detmer, former Heisman winner at BYU, and replaced him with Jeff Grimes from LSU and revitalized that entire offense with Satake. And that's how they got him, because he was just like, I've seen this offense. I'm good. Like, I know what BYU looks like, and that's a hard pass for me.
Thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah. And then they change it up, and then he just commits right away, and now 3 years later, he is now, like, the numbers this year are bonkers, and I don't think people realize just how bonkers his numbers have been. Wilson leads the nation in completion percentage at 81.2%. He's second in yards per attempt at 12.3 yards per throw, third in passing efficiency, and ninth in passing yards per game at 310.3 through three games. This is the most stunning stat. Wilson has had as many incompletions as total touchdowns. 11. He has thrown only 11 incompletions this season, and he's thrown 11 touchdown passes. That is bonkers. Give me Zach Wilson for Heisman right now. Print the shirts for the Chase Thomas podcast, the full ride, whatever. I will rock it. It's time to really get the Zach Wilson for Heisman conversation into full gear on the full ride. What do you think, Matt?
Hey, I'm with you, man. I'm drinking the Zach Wilson Kool-Aid. They've been unstoppable this year, and he specifically has just been making plays with his legs, making plays with his arm. I don't want to rain on your parade. I just have his stats in front of me. I'm seeing 19 completions on the season. So, you know,
no, it's not that 19 complete. It's incompletions.
19. Yeah, I'm saying he's 82 for 101 on the season. So,
oh.
19. That's not even impressed by that. No, I'm just joking. It's obviously still having
shots fired at Chris Vanini in his stat checking.
Is that right? Yeah. So not to hate on eight more completions over the course of four games, but yeah, Zach Wilson has been just ridiculous this year, and they just keep inching their way up the polls. It's weird now because you have all these Big Ten teams and Pac-12 teams in the polls, so it's like it seems like BYU's kind of maxed out, like they're just not going to put them ahead of Penn State and things like that, I guess. But once those teams start playing and BYU just keeps on winning, I feel like they probably have as good a shot as any team. Like, I don't think any team has a real shot outside of the Power Five to get in the playoff. They're just not going to do it. But if there's one that does have a shot, I think BYU has the best shot.
I like it. Last thing before we get into memory lane with Matt Green. Breaking news on this podcast before we started recording. Lincoln Riley is the Vegas odds-on favorite to become the next Atlanta Falcons head coach. Matt, I don't know what to do. I feel like a real life encapsulation of Matthew McConaughey smoking that cigarette as deeply as humanly possible. And I mean, I know how you feel about Lincoln Riley, and it's what we call wrong in the business. And I am absolutely here for it. Oh my God. Give me Lincoln Riley with Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley in this offense every day of the week. I don't care. And the people who are like, what about the defense? You can sit down. I am so tired of hearing about the Falcons defense over this Dan Quinn tenure and the Mike Smith tenure. I don't care. If the Falcons have the number one or number two offensive DVOA for the next 5 years because they hired Lincoln Riley to carry out the remainder of Matt Ryan's prime, and this offense is just the greatest show on turf for a five-year stretch, and they go at worst 8-8 because they just outscore everybody because there's that much firepower and because Lincoln Riley is such a good offensive mind and the defense still sucks, guess what? No different than these past 5 years. No different. Dan Quinn tried to fix the defense. If you hire a defensive mind, I will lose my mind because I'm so over it. I'm so over teams who still think that they should go with the defensive guy route instead of just maximizing your talent on offense and scoring as many points as humanly possible. That is what I want to see on Sundays. I don't care what it takes to get there. That is all I want. Lincoln Riley, sign me up. Let's ride.
Okay, well, I'm going to play some devil's advocate here because if you don't address the defense in any way, I mean, you're just – the Falcons offense hasn't been the problem in the last 5 years. It hasn't even been the problem.
It's actually fallen apart. So the Falcons offense, so with Dan Quinn now being, I think, 5 games under .500 since 2018, the offense has dipped every single year since the Super Bowl year. The offense
well,
is
that,
dipping.
That might be true, but the offense is still good. I mean, I think
no,
I
it's
saw
not. Like the offense last year was 22nd in offensive efficiency.
But they had the most points ever scored to the first three
points,
games
man.
For a team
it's more
that
than
was
0-3. I'm telling you, it's more the offense has fallen apart. People just see the names, the numbers. The offense has dwindled. The offense has dwindled.
And
the
that
offense
might be true, but I would say the Falcons offense isn't the problem. So if you're not going to address the defense, and you're just going to be like, oh, let's bring in a guy to bring make the offense
Yeah, make
way
the offense
better.
Number one in football. Guess what? Do you know how many teams, when the offense is number one in football, have missed the playoffs? Do you know how many? Zero. This is an offense only league. You
and are the Falcons trying to make the playoffs? Are they cool with making the playoffs?
Yes, that's all I want.
No,
competence.
The Falcons want to win Super Bowls. If they're cool winning,
this is Atlanta. Super Bowls, like, lower your expectations. I don't believe in a Super Bowl. No, just give me fun Mike March style offenses for the next 5 years, and I'm happy. That's all I want.
Also, competence. why is Lincoln Riley a better option than Eric Bieniemy? I feel like he's been leading an NFL offense. Like, maybe Patrick Mahomes isn't coming with him and Tyreek Hill isn't coming to Atlanta with him. But, I mean, he's been leading the best offense in the NFL for the last couple of years.
He's fine. I'll take that. I wouldn't hate either, honestly. If you go with the best, if you pluck from the best offensive coaching tree in football or the best college coaching, offensive coaching tree in football, then I'm fine with it. The fact that they're focusing on two offensive minds is good. Stop with the defensive minds, guys. Like, just stop. Just pay Wade Phillips whatever he wants and then let him coach the defense for a couple of years. That's what I would do.
So is this a universal football philosophy for you? Or is this only pros?
Everything. This is how I...
Everything?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's my philosophy.
I think some defensive-minded head coach coaches have been doing some great things in college football. That's all I'm saying.
Alabama doesn't stay Alabama without adapting offensively. They change their offense. They bring in Kiffin. You see with Dabo, and that Clemson's defensive line is great, obviously, but what keeps them going is the Trevor Lawrence's, the five stars they get there, the Travis Etienne's, the Justin Ross's, everybody.
I would argue that Alabama, Clemson, and Ohio State, and even Georgia, obviously they're most people would consider a step below those other three. Like, those have been some of the most consistent defensive teams in the country over the last few years. Like, Alabama,
Auburn's
over the last
top
decade.
Five in defense every year, but they can't fix the offense. Like,
Auburn isn't anything every year. I feel like Auburn is just like flip a coin.
Kevin Steele's defenses
out.
Have been elite every year he's been at Auburn. Every year. My team building strategy in football in general is just worry about the offense first, get an elite offense, and then start thinking about the defense. Until you figured out the offense, and until you have a top 10, top 15 offense in football, do not even think about the defense. Do not worry about what you're doing there. That is my philosophy. That, because then if you get that point, if you get the offense solved, then what separates the contenders from just like the average Big 12 team is the defense. Like, the reason Georgia is separate is because of their defense. But if they do not have that competent offense first, we see what happens. The James Cole year. Like, great defense can only go so far in football these days. Ultimately,
I mean,
you
that team also went 11-1 with a terrible offensive coordinator.
But you weren't
you know
a contender. Like, there was no chance that you could ever win a title with that offense. Like,
I don't think they were a legitimate contender, no. But it was also like, that offense was worse than any other offense Georgia's had. But my rebuttal to your point would be, who are the two, honestly, the two greatest coaches of all time in college and in pros that are currently doing it? Is Nick Saban and Bill Belichick. Like, they're the they're the two goats, and they're both defensive minded guys first. So I feel like I wouldn't just sell out just to be as explosive as I could be on offense and just worry about the defense later. You always have to have both. You know, you got to have a legitimate defense to win a championship. I think it's just
I disagree.
Even if you're playing
Alabama,
with
was
these
literally
shootouts
the
at Clemson.
LSU
Alabama.
Just won a title with a horrible defense. Their defense was horrible across the board last year. They just won a title.
they didn't have good numbers.
The
but
Chiefs
we know
were
they
not
had
top
dudes.
10 in defense last year. They just
we know
won
they
a
had
Super Bowl.
All across the board on their defense, though. And as the season went on, I mean, LSU got significantly better.
No.
Defense.
What is LSU's final defensive numbers? I'm going to look
I'm
this
saying
up.
They had a. They played A&M. I know they blasted A&M at the end of the year, killed Georgia, shut down Oklahoma, like. Beat Clemson pretty bad. Like, they gave up some points against Oklahoma and Clemson, but, like, I mean, compared to what Oklahoma was doing against everyone else and Clemson against everyone else for that matter, like, LSU definitely got stops on them. Like, LSU, the numbers, you're definitely right. Like, LSU gave up a lot of points, but I feel like it was kind of early in the season that they were getting scored
they
on a lot.
They gave up
more.
38 to Vanderbilt last year.
But it was, like, what was that, like, first, second game of the
Fourth
year?
Fourth game.
Yeah, early in the season, they were giving up a lot
of
points.
God.
But
the caveats
they,
you have here.
I mean, they also had like eight dudes drafted off that defense that went to the NFL. So they had
37 to Ole Miss. I mean, it, just their defense was bad. It was objectively bad.
And yeah, I mean, it wasn't great. And obviously, they had like the greatest offense in the history of football. And in the history of college football last year, and that won them a championship.
Auburn's
I just
national
don't know
championship
if that's
a, season. They did not
I don't
have
know
great
if that's
defense.
A sustainable tactic, because you're just not going to have the number one overall pick at quarterback on your team every year, you know, throwing 60 touchdown
yeah,
passes.
Yeah, you're not going to win, probably. Have, you're probably not going to win the title.
You're not going to win the title if you don't have a number one overall pick at quarterback?
I mean, if you don't,
like,
yeah.
Look how many
point,
teams.
At this point, yeah, debatable. Probably.
Look how many teams have won national championships without having...
Oh, no. You have to look at the last 5 years, because football has changed so much, even from the Mark Ingram winning the Heisman years. You have to only look at the last couple of years. That's it, because the football is completely different now than what it was 7 years ago. You can only look... There's a reason that Herbert, Lawrence, and Jalen Hurts, and Tua were the best... teams in college football last year. Like,
I mean, 2017, Georgia and Alabama were playing for the national title. Like, neither right. of those teams had the best offense in college.
People were talking about Jake Fromm as a first round quarterback at that point.
I mean, but anyone that watched that team, you knew Jake Fromm wasn't the reason that
but
team was good.
Were,
that team
he
was good because they had
Justin
two 1,200 yard rushers on the team, and they had maybe the best defense in the conference.
But it wasn't about the defense. It was if you do not have
I'm just
the
saying,
best
there's a.
If you do not have a top three quarterback in college football, you cannot win a title anymore. You just can't.
We'll see, man. I feel like Jacob Coker, that wasn't that long ago that Alabama was winning a title with Jacob Coker.
You keep going back. I said less than 5 years. Football is different.
2015. That's not that long ago.
It was very long ago. That's a totally different college football.
And then Jalen Hurts, because obviously Tua came in and saved the day for Alabama in the national championship. But like Jalen Hurts and Jake Fromm. Jalen Hurts.
He was a Heisman candidate last year.
Yeah, Jalen Hurts, what he did at Alabama was
he was
a game
great.
Manager. He threw like 15 touchdowns and like
he's
zero picks
very good.
Or one pick or something his last year at Alabama. His last year starting at Alabama. So
Jalen Hurts was very good.
I mean, Jalen Hurts was super average, honestly.
Oh, okay. We got to move on. I'm never going to change
really
your mind
was.
On this.
He threw like 15 touchdown passes. Like, if that's super average. He was, obviously
he was doing all kinds of stuff on the ground. He was destroying people through the air and through the ground. He was able to do whatever he wanted.
He was destroying anybody in the SEC.
He was Sam Ehlinger before Sam Ehlinger.
I don't even know how to interpret that. But I feel like he didn't put up any of the numbers Sam Ehlinger put, rushing or passing, honestly. But he's playing against the SEC. I'm not saying Sam Ehlinger's better than him, but Jalen Hurts, offensively, Alabama was not anything special in 2017. And neither was Georgia. And those are the two teams that were playing for the national championship 3 years ago. Those are two teams that were playing for the national championship that didn't have the dynamic top five pick at quarterback.
Agree to disagree, Matt Green.
I mean, you can disagree with like the premise moving forward, but that is fact. Like 2017, Alabama and Georgia had limited passing games and they were playing for a national championship.
I don't think that's really true, but we can move on. Matt Green, what is your memory lane this week?
Oh, I was worried about doing memory lane this week that I would spoil one of my picks in the pick'em, but you know, we're just going to go with it. So I'm going to take you back to a year called 2007. You remember this year?
I do.
This is a great year for me. This is probably the best team of the Mark Richt era, I would say. A team that did the blackout against Auburn and everything. No Sean Marino, Matthew Stafford. Fun team to watch. Obviously didn't make the SEC, didn't win the national title, but it was a fun team to watch. So we had 2007 is probably the craziest college football season we have ever seen. And 2020 is probably the only one that's going to be able to trump it, but no pun intended. But that year you had Boston College get up to number two in the rankings one week. You had Missouri and Kansas number one and number two facing at the end of the year. You had South Florida was ranked number two at one point. I think you had something like eight or nine teams that were ranked number two that season. And ultimately you saw a two loss national champion and LSU beat Ohio State, the Les Miles and Jim Tressel eras of those two schools. So if we take it to the SEC, this is the last time that Tennessee, your boys up on Rocky Top, last time they played for an SEC title was 2007. Almost beat LSU too. I think it was a pick six late in that game that LSU was able to beat Tennessee on. But why am I bringing up this year 2007 to you, Chase?
Repeat that last part one more time.
I'm saying, why am I bringing up 2007 to you?
I don't know. You're very upset. You're very into 15 years ago college football. So,
hey, I was, man. This is my senior year of high school.
Yeah,
this was good stuff. I was huge into 2007. I know Mark Sanchez was at USC at that point. It was a much different time. But the reason I bring up 2007 is this was the last time for two things for this big matchup we got this weekend. This was the last time that Georgia went to Tuscaloosa. And more importantly for Georgia fans, it was the last time that Georgia beat the Alabama Crimson Tide. 2007, it's been 13 years. When would you say, I'm just going to put you on the spot here, trivia question. When was the last time Alabama beat Georgia in Tuscaloosa? Not in Athens. In Tuscaloosa. You have a guess, sir.
They don't play that often, so I got to think about this. Was it a Mike Shula year?
It was not a Mike Shula year.
Was it a Price year?
I don't think there were any Price years.
Was Zhao under center for the Alabama Crimson Tide?
He was not. Was it Andrew Zhao?
Something like that.
That's a throwback right there.
I don't know. Who was it? I know. I mean, obviously it wasn't Saban, but I'm trying to think. I guess the 90s. Man, who is it?
The head coach? Shoot, I gotta find that information. I wasn't ready for you to throw me on the spot like that. But 1995.
Mm. Jim Donnan?
1994, I'm sorry. 1994, the last time Alabama beat Georgia in Tuscaloosa. So you're talking one, two, three straight losses that only two straight losses Alabama's had to Georgia. That's kind of ridiculous that they've only played in Tuscaloosa three times in the last 25 years. But that's the last time that that Alabama was able to beat Georgia in Tuscaloosa. Gene Stallings was the head coach at Alabama at that time. Was this the this is probably before Don? And yeah, this is the Ray Goff era of Georgia football. This is a dark time in Georgia football lore. But I think 2007, that was the last time Georgia beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa. They're doing that again this year. Could this be another win for Georgia in Bryant-Denny Stadium? We shall find out. But 2007, that was my that's our throwback of the week.
I like it. I like it. All right. Are you ready to get into this week's pick'em?
Oh, you know it, man.
All right, where are we going first?
All right. Unfortunately, we've had a little bit of a switch up. As of about an hour ago, Cincinnati and Tulsa was postponed over the weekend. I'm real disappointed about that because I thought this was going to be like a low key, big time game in the American Athletic Conference. But so we're not picking this game, but I did have a trivia question for you for this game. Only one team in college football has played a team ranked 11th or higher in every game this season. Who would that team be?
Who do you think?
That would be the Golden Hurricane. Played Oklahoma State, beat UCF, and now they're at Cincinnati this week. But I think they said that game's going to be postponed to December 5th.
Yeah.
So thought that was interesting. So, but we'll move on. We won't pick that one. So the first one we got on the noon slate, we got Miami is a 10.5-point favorite over Pittsburgh at home. Chase, what are your thoughts?
Pitt's in a free fall. Pat Narduzzi, really in a free fall here. I don't like what's going on here for Pitt. So I like Miami to bounce back here. I don't think Miami is as bad as it looked against Clemson, and Clemson and Alabama just make teams that are actually good look just so much worse than they actually are. And I think D'Arc King bounces back here. Give me D'Arc King and the Miami Hurricanes over Kenny Pickett and that rambunctious group in Pittsburgh to not only win but also cover.
I feel like I'm not giving up on Pat Narduzzi yet. I'm not giving up on the Panthers yet. So they've had two straight 1-point losses, and those are heartbreaking losses. So we're gonna have to see what this Pitt team is made of this week, but I think. Well, I'm not writing them off. I'm also not picking them to get a win here either. I think it's the third straight close loss for Pitt. So I think they cover, but I think Miami gets the win.
Okay. Next up, where are we going?
And then next up, this was a tricky one for me because both of these teams could be 1-2 right now. South Carolina is 1-2. Auburn is 2-1. South Carolina is a 3.5-point underdog at home. Who are you liking in this one?
I've gone back and forth on this, Matt. What do you have? You go first.
All right, I'll take it first. I was going back and forth on this one. After the Arkansas game last week, at this point, I really don't even know what to make of Auburn. I mean, shoot, we don't even know what to make of Arkansas. But I can't believe in Will Muschamp in South Carolina. Like, they put a big number up on Vanderbilt. Like, yeah, that's cool. But I don't know. Something's telling me that Auburn finds a way to win this game by multiple scores, like a 10-point, 14-point win. Like, I have a feeling it's going to be ugly, but I think Auburn's going to right the ship a little bit and get a comfortable win.
I think so, too. I'm writing out this offense, and I think I'm writing out Auburn as a contender for the foreseeable future. I think Bo Nix is just bad, and I think Colin Hill is actually a better quarterback than Bo Nix, and I think that will come into play here, but I trust Auburn's defense more than I trust South Carolina's, which I think is very sketchy. So give me Auburn in the points, but I don't feel good about it at all. Auburn's
I feel
cooked.
Like... Can we talk about your hatred for Bo Nix? Can we talk about that?
He's just not good.
I feel like you hate Bo Nix. I don't know that you actually do.
I get annoyed about five-star prospects that, like, Kyle Trask, I think, was like a two-star, and he's the best quarterback in the SEC. And then you look at guys like KJ Costello, who was a five-star, and he's just throwing 93 picks through 3 weeks at Mississippi State. It's just, I get annoyed about programs and fan bases that just look at high prospects like Austin Riley. He looks so good at AAA. It's like, no, Austin Riley sucks. Okay, Dansby Swanson, first overall pick. He can be the next Jeter. No, he can't because he's not that, and he's not that good. He's fine. He is a utility shortstop. It's just when we have these labels on guys because of their youth, it just drives me nuts because then you can no longer look at who they are objectively anymore. And I think Bo Nix, we have a year and a half almost of evidence that he is just not good. And
we'll take the five-star label off of Bo Nix. And what are your thoughts of him?
He's inaccurate. He's not someone who, like, he gets bailed out by Seth Williams all the time. He, I think, moves through, like, it's just really hard to figure out some stuff with him, which is that the offensive line's not good. So the offensive line not being good, him running for his life. But I think he loves to run for his life a little too much. And I think he is just, he wants to be Johnny Manziel, and he's just not. And I don't think he's just got it. I don't think he's going to be accurate. And you just have to be more accurate than him. You have to be more crisp running an offense than him. And he's just not someone who's going to be cerebral and just overpower teams.
And don't we all just want to be Johnny Manziel, though?
I mean, Zach Wilson, I guess the best example is, like, he wants to be Zach Wilson, but Zach Wilson is completing 81% of his passes when he's freestyling.
Bo Nix freestyles all the time. He's built in that, like, Colt McCoy kind of, like, type of player. But Colt McCoy, same with Zach Wilson, was complete, like, 80% of his passes by his senior year. Like, ridiculous completion percentage. But, yeah, I don't know. I haven't given up on Bo Nix, but it seems like he's kind of know what he is at this point. Yes. I mean, I don't want to say that about a guy who's a sophomore, but he seems like he's a solid
game manager. We're in double-digit starts.
Who can make some plays with his legs. So I feel like I'm not going to write off. Oh yeah, in this win, beating South Carolina isn't really saying anything about Auburn. They have to get this win when you look at the games remaining on their schedule. But yeah, we'll see. Bo Nix definitely needs a bounce back performance after the last couple weeks. But keeping things going, I'm about to make an enemy on this show right now. On our 12 o'clock SEC Network game.
Don't do this.
We got the Vols 6-point favorite home over Kentucky.
Lock it up, Vols cover and win.
This game's got trap game written all over it, Chase. Like, I don't want to do that to you. I promise. I'm not trying to make any enemies here. But if you saw what Kentucky did last week to that Mississippi State offense, granted, it could be more of an indictment on that Mississippi State offense that we really just have no idea what to expect in Mike Leach's team week in and week out. But 6 interceptions in one game, like holding that air raid offense to 2 points, I feel like that's very significant. And Kentucky is a team that was unlucky in the first 2 games. I think I kind of liked them more than a lot of people did after the first 2 weeks. And Tennessee, just this game sandwiched in between Georgia and Alabama. Those are the 2 biggest games on Tennessee's entire schedule. I bet you they're just coming in, sleepwalking to this noon kickoff against the Wildcats, and they're just thinking they can just roll out of bed, and this offensive line's going to, you know, just dominate the opponent. And I'm not sure that's going to happen. I think I'm going to go with Kentucky to get the upset this week.
You're out of your mind. zero chance that Kentucky walks into Neyland this weekend and gets a win. Garantano bounces back. I think they run the ball much better this week than they did the previous week. I think Eric Gray has a good day. The defense is going to be all over Terry Wilson in this offense. This Kentucky offense stinks. And you need to score points to beat Tennessee. And that's not going to happen here. So give me the Vols to win and cover.
Well, and Tennessee's run defense looked pretty solid last week. Like, they gave Georgia, you know, they stopped
DeAndre Johnson's going to play in this game, too, which is nice.
That too. And so they stopped Georgia on 2 big, 4th and shorts. Like, their run defense was good. And Kentucky has been
one-dimensional
on offense this year. So that is definitely going to be their best shot. I at least like that Terry Wilson can make some plays with his legs when he needs to, and he's going to need to make some plays with his legs. There's something about this game. I think it's an intangible thing that I'm pointing to. You know, I don't think Kentucky's better than Tennessee necessarily, but this Kentucky team's, they've fought hard so far in their first few games, and I just think Tennessee might be overlooking them.
Well, you can't always be right, and that's something you have to deal with after Saturday.
But we'll keep it moving. We'll keep it moving. The 3:30 ABC, we got UCF at Memphis. Memphis is a 3.5-point underdog at home. What are your thoughts on this one?
Both teams really need a win here. Both teams are coming off some rocky starts. Memphis obviously getting delayed because of COVID. UCF getting just... I love Dylan Gabriel. I still think he's very good. And I still think Josh Heupel is a very good coach. I'm not sure about Sutterfield yet. We'll see. Or Silverfield, whatever his name is. Ryan Silverfield, who replaced Norvell. Give me UCF to not only win, but give me them to cover as well.
Yeah, I'm starting a petition to have the AAC replace the Big 12 as one of the Power 5 conferences in college football. I was just going down the AAC schedule this week. Like, this is low-key a super solid conference.
Well, I think I did text you that, like, the Big 12 has to be kicking themselves because they can just have the two best of the AAC in the Big 12. It would help their conference.
Cincinnati and who?
I mean, you could do Cincinnati and UCF.
Yeah. That would just be so weird to have UCF in the Big 12. But
they would fit. Yeah, they play, like Big 12 teams.
With UCF,
Josh Heupel went to Oklahoma.
If with UCF and Memphis, and you also have Cincinnati, SMU, Tulsa, like Houston, Navy, like it's low key like a solid conference.
I think it's a better conference than the Big 12 this year. I would agree.
Yeah, it really does look like it. So, but both of these teams are averaging over 500 yards per game, and both of them are also allowing over 450 yards per game. So I'm thinking this one's just going to be a shootout. UCF, I also like in this one, like a 48-44 kind of game. And they'll cover the spread. But moving on to the ACC, this is a game that that I really struggled with. Two teams that have both played against Clemson, and they both played NC State. And so those are like kind of the measuring sticks we have for them. But Wake Forest comes in as a 2.5-point underdog at home versus Virginia. What are your thoughts on this one?
I can't believe this is only 2.5. What is Vegasing with Wake that I'm not? I don't understand why Virginia is just getting no love here. Give me Virginia and the points. I don't understand. Virginia's still good. They had a bad, like, they're losing to good ACC teams. That's about it. Bronco Mendenhall is not getting off to this bad of a start. I don't think so. Give me the Cavaliers here.
That is true, but are you aware that Wake Forest is actually leading the ACC in points per game?
I was not, and that's surprising.
So you're a big offense guy.
I'm not a Clawfence guy, though. Never been a big Dave Clawfence kind of person. I don't know.
Man, I got to correct myself. That's not true. They're averaging 40.3. They're fourth in the conference in points per game.
I was going to say, anyone ahead of Clemson right now would be surprising to me.
Yeah, Virginia Tech actually is ahead of Clemson, 42.7 versus 42.3. So Wake Forest has the fourth highest scoring offense in the ACC so far. But I think I'm leaning towards Wake Forest in this one. I said that both these teams have played Clemson and NC State. Wake Forest lost 82-55 to those two teams. And Virginia has been outscored 79-44 against those two teams. So that really tells us absolutely nothing. But what I'm going off of is turning the ball over. Wake Forest is near the top in the country in turnover differential. Virginia has a negative turnover differential. And Wake Forest is also leading the conference in kickoff average. So they got good special teams, and they don't turn the ball over. I'm taking Wake Forest.
You're alone.
So, moving forward, we got a few disagreements this week, so that's solid. But going back to the ACC, we got a 3:30 ESPN2 kickoff, and that is going to be Arkansas hosting Ole Miss. And Ole Miss is a 3-point favorite on the road. What are you thinking about this one?
Now, this is an offense I love. I mean, I am a well-documented Joey Freshwater Ole Miss lover. I would have welcomed him back in Knoxville, unlike most people around here. Give me Ole Miss big. I think Arkansas has been a good story. I'm excited to see Barry Odom versus Kiffin. I'm very excited to see how they hold up. But this is not Auburn. This is an offense that knows what they're doing. This offense is legit. Matt Corral is just a monster with Kiffin's scheme, and I think they score way too much for Arkansas to keep up. So give me Ole Miss in the points.
I'm going to channel my inner Lee Corso when I say, not so fast.
Oh, no.
We all know about Ole Miss's offense. Ole Miss's offense has been ridiculous this year. And Lane Kiffin's clearly pressing all the right buttons. But the defense, man, all you care about is offense. I'm starting to pick up on that trend over here, Chase. Yep. You love the offense.
I've been very clear. I don't think I'm hiding this from anyone.
You can't overlook that defense, man. Right now, they're 14th, which is last in the SEC, in defensive or in points per game allowed, and yards per game allowed, and rushing yards allowed. They're averaging more than 100 yards more rushing yards allowed than the 13th team in the SEC. Like, they are getting run on so much. Like, I don't know what Arkansas's identity necessarily is to this point in the season, but like, I saw what Felipe Franks did to Auburn last week, and Auburn's defense isn't nearly as bad as Ole Miss. Like, I just don't see Ole Miss getting any stops. And at home, I feel like I'm feeling like a shootout, and I think Arkansas is going to win. I think Arkansas is going to find a way to win like a 41-38 kind of game.
I like these disagreements. I'm definitely bouncing back and just submitting.
We're going to have some decisive totals after this week, because there's a lot of disagreements so far. But then we move on to SEC Network at 4:00. This is going to be an interesting one to see how they bounce back from their big win. Texas A&M is a 6.5-point favorite at Mississippi State. Going to Stark Vegas. What are your thoughts?
Mississippi State, like, everything's on the table. They're benching everybody. KJ Costello might get benched in this game. I think Mississippi State has real problems. But the most Mike Leach thing to do after these bad losses back-to-back weeks would be to just upend Texas A&M's good vibes and dash those. But I think Texas A&M figured some stuff out last week against Florida, and I think they win here. Give me Texas A&M and the give me Texas A&M and the points.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I feel like Mississippi State scored 2 points against Kentucky. I feel like that's the biggest thing that's fueling my thoughts for this game. And so
A&M's,
I think Texas
defense is not good. They're not good.
That's true. But I think I like Texas A&M.
Yeah.
Like, winning by a solid 17 points or something like that. Moving on to Conference USA, Louisiana Tech is a 14-point underdog at home to the Herd, to Marshall. What do you think?
You love the Herd.
I am feeling the Herd this year. They've allowed 7 points per game. I know you love the offense. Marshall's allowed 7 points per game so far through 3 games. They've had 2 games postponed. I think Marshall will get it done. This could be a Conference USA championship preview right here.
I like Marshall to win, but give me Louisiana Tech to cover.
All right. And then this is probably the one I struggle with the most, because I've been feeling Virginia Tech this year, but they're 11.5-point favorite over Boston College. And
that's a lot of points.
That seems like just too many points. And I think this is where I got confused in my notes. Virginia Tech is first in the points per game, and they're last in the ACC in points per game allowed. I feel like Boston College has been in every game they've played so far this year. So I'm going to take Virginia Tech to win, but I think Boston College keeps it close and covers the spread.
Give me Virginia Tech, and give me Virginia Tech to cover.
All right.
All the way in on Boston College's offense. I'm just not all the way there.
I know. Djurkovic, man. I'm buying what he's selling.
I'm not buying the arm motion.
They've been tough, though. They've been in like every game they've played. And yes. Virginia Tech, I'm just not sure what to make of them.
That offense is legit. That's the thing about Virginia Tech, is I'm sure about their offense, and I don't know if I'm sure about Boston College just yet.
All right, and now we got our final game of the week, College Game Day in Tuscaloosa. Alabama comes in. I think this spread's actually down to 4 now, but where we have it in our pick'em, it's Alabama's a 6-point favorite over Georgia.
Give me Alabama to win and cover.
Alabama to win and cover. As you know,
are you actually going to do this? Are you really going to do this with Stetson Bennett being the one? Is this the time to do it?
Hey, you bite your tongue over there, sir.
This
Georgia
is ridiculous.
Has had the best.
If you actually defense, do this,
Georgia's had the best defense in college football this year. Like, yeah, Alabama's. Is this Alabama?
Great. Have you seen Mac Jones throw a football this year?
Have you seen Mac Jones be hit one time this year? Have you seen any pressure on Mac Jones one time this year?
Oh, I have. Georgia fans, folks.
Hey, you don't. There's some people that aren't Georgia fans out there that are picking Georgia. So
yeah, we call those crazy people.
You bite your tongue, sir. Georgia's got the best. It's basically got the best defense in college football, just across the board. If you go look at the SEC stats, they're first in basically every major category.
Great, except Bama's putting 45 on y'all on Saturday.
I don't. Do you think this Alabama offense is as good as LSU's offense was last year?
They're close, yeah.
I don't know how you can say they're close. That was the
Najee Harris and that
60 touchdowns. Joe Burrow threw 60 touchdowns.
I'm saying they're close. I am saying they're close. They are close.
They are a very good offense, but I feel like this looks more like the 2018 Bama offense to me, which was also an amazing offense. And this Georgia defense is by far the best of the Kirby Smart era. Like
They're wasting it on Stetson Bennett in this offense. You're not scoring enough. It's not going to happen.
They've had some good defenses for sure for Georgia, but none of them actually got after the quarterback and created these havoc plays.
Well, then you put in Bryce Young to switch things up.
What's that?
Then you put in Bryce Young to switch things up.
Hey, they might have to do that when Georgia's getting after Mac Jones in the first half. But
tradition.
I think Georgia just a great job of disguising their pressures, disguising their coverages and everything like that. And I think they're going to get pressure on Mac Jones. And that's something you just haven't seen Alabama have to deal with this year. And so I think I feel like there's two big matchups here. It's obviously going to be the offensive line versus the defensive line. If Georgia can at least contain Najee Harris in Alabama's run game by not selling out against the run, which they've been able to do this year, and keep enough guys in coverage. Like, Georgia's got some great corners. I don't know if they're on Alabama's receivers level, but they also have maybe the best safety in college football. It's one of the best linebacker cores in college football. Clearly one of the best defensive lines in college football. And if Georgia's able to sustain some drives like they were unable to do last year against LSU with how awful Georgia's offense was last year, they already look better than Georgia's offense was a year ago. If they're able to sustain some drives, and I think they can, because Alabama, they're not going to do what Ole Miss did, but Alabama's defense has just been getting gashed this year. And I think if Georgia can hold Alabama to a 24, 27 type of points, I think Georgia can win this game. And so if I got to go on the record, I'm taking Georgia 27-24.
Good God. Well, Matt, we'll have to eat these words on the Sunday show, but we are at a time crunch today, unfortunately. So we're going to have to leave it there. Matt, thank you as always, sir. We can find you on Twitter again at Matt_W_Green. Me at Chase_Thomas. If you like today's episode, make sure to leave a 5-star rating and a review and all that good stuff. So we will be back on Sunday with a normal full-length show, but again, sorry for the slight delay here, but it is just other things to get to real quick. So Matt, thank you, sir, and we'll be back next week on Sunday.
Yes, sir. I'll be waiting your apology after this Georgia-Alabama game.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
JV Weld, world's strongest bond. Pros have trusted it for over 50 years. But why hire a pro when you can JV Weld it? JV Weld makes it easy to do yourself. We're proud to have JV Weld Adhesives as a sponsor. I personally know the owner. Hung out with these guys down at the car show there. And I have all their products. What can I say? DIY projects, good, auto stuff, crafts, plumbing, marine, all the applications. I use a product to fix Sonny's tennis shoe, save myself some money. Stromer used it to fix his tray on his wet saw because he's doing some tile work. Different product, but all made by JB Weld. JB Weld just acquired Herculiner, the original DIY truck bed liner. So if you're looking for the world's strongest truck bed liner, Herculiner has you covered. JB Weld, right, Dawson?
JB Weld is available at jbweld.com, Home Depot, Lowe's, Walmart, AutoZone, Advanced Auto Parts, Napa, O'Reilly, Amazon, Michaels, and more. And remember, JB Weld epoxy products are proudly made in the USA. JB Weld, world's strongest bond.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.